We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
Scott Lamar, it's a name that is popular as some of the larger brands in central Pennsylvania. When you think Pepsi, you think Scott Lamar. When you think Phillies, you think Scott Lamar. And when you think WYTF, you think Scott Lamar. And after 46 years in broadcasting, 44 years in news and talk radio, 32 years at WYTF, and 13 years hosting Smart Talk, which is now The Spark, Scott Lamar is ready to make his next move, and today we celebrate the career and contributions of Mr. Lamar, giving him his flowers while he can still smell them. And if we looked at what was going on 46 years ago, a few things stand out. The Bee Gees, Saturday Night Live fever goes number one. The film Grease hit the theaters, and the first Halloween starring Jamie Lee Curtis made its debut. And a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed Scott Lamar started his radio career. So, Scott, take us to that moment. A young Scottonius Lamar deciding what he wants to do with his life. How did you land on the idea of a career in radio?
Well, first of all, when you mentioned the Bee Gees, my first job in radio was as a disc jockey. And it was at a time with Saturday Night Fever that the Bee Gees were dominating all the music from Saturday Night Live, and I was spinning records, okay? We didn't have CDs or anything like that. We played them on vinyl, and there were 45s. I keep doing this because this is how you cue a record. You know, I can't talk about it without, for the radio audience, I'm actually moving my hand back and forth. But it's kind of a long story. I thought about this a few months ago. When I was 8 years old, our house burned down. The house was fairly new. It was 8 months old. Furnace was leaking oil, and it exploded. So the house was destroyed by fire. We went to live with my grandparents. My grandfather was a huge Phillies fan. He listened to the Phillies every night, so I couldn't miss hearing the Phillies. So that's how I became a Phillies fan, baseball fan. In the neighborhood, everyone played sports all season around, from morning to night when we were off school. Football, basketball, street hockey eventually came, but baseball especially because we were off school. So that was really fun. You know, I enjoyed myself. My parents were splitting up, so sports is kind of what kept me going. So I played sports in school. I was best at baseball. But I figured if I couldn't be a Major League Baseball player, like, you know, how many millions of other kids wanted to be, I would be a sports writer. So I decided I wanted to be a sports writer. Well, my senior year in high school, in Coatesville, we had a TV station. There were TVs in all the classrooms, and that's how we delivered the morning announcements. We did a sports cast. Friday mornings, we did a weather forecast. So I kind of changed my mind that, I'd like to be a sports broadcaster. Went to a broadcasting school in Philadelphia to be a sports broadcaster. Well, there are very few just sports jobs at that time. There was no ESPN, nothing like that. So you were told you had to start work at a small town radio station and work your way up and eventually get to do what you want to do. So my first job was at WPDC in Elizabethtown. It was part-time. First full-time job was at WFTR in Front Royal, Virginia, where you did everything, but mostly on the air, spinning records. But I got to do some play-by-play, read some newscasts, things like that. Eventually found my way back here to Central Pennsylvania. I was working part-time again at WAHT in Lebanon. And I was 21 at the time, and the news director left the station. And the program director at that time asked, have you thought about that news job? And I thought, I don't know anything about news, but I needed a job. So I talked to the owner of the station, got the job, found out I loved it. You know, going to county commissioner meetings, city council meetings, school board meetings. Now, that may not sound entertaining, but in the city of Lebanon, it was a big deal when someone would hear a siren. They would call the station wanting to know what was going on. The VA hospital in Lebanon had false alarms every single day. You could go to the police station early in the morning, pick up the police reports, call around to the other police departments. So news became my thing, and that's all I wanted to do. So I stayed with news, eventually started doing talk radio at a station in York, and then came to Radio Pennsylvania, which was a subsidiary of WITF, Commercial Radio Network, statewide radio network, became the director of affiliate relations and programming. Then Smart Talk TV came along. I was a producer, and then eventually, first was Radio Smart Talk, and then became Smart Talk, and eventually The Spark. So that's a long story to get to where we are today. But, you know, thinking about how that fire and the events kind of cascaded to where we are today.
Well, talking about fire, what lit the fire in you to make the transition from sports to news?
Just that I enjoyed it. I enjoyed news. In Lebanon, a city the size of Lebanon, the people in news on the radio were kind of celebrities, and there was always something to do. I was single when I first started. I met my wife because of she worked in the Lebanon County Prothonotary's office. So, kind of just I started news, and I thought, this is what I want to do.
Now, how did covering local government meetings and all those type events shape your understanding of community-based needs and issues?
The first week I was in the news department, a Lebanon County commissioner asked if I would be interested in sitting down with him to have him talk about what county government did. Now, you know, I figured out later that it was an election year. So, you know, he had an agenda. But I did learn just from that hour and a half meeting with him a lot about county government. I still think that there are very few people that don't know what county government does. But all the things, and this was 1979, all the things that I was covering in Lebanon all the time, today don't get covered. Because the newspaper was always there, but the radio stations, because there were several radio stations, were always there covering everything. The county commissioners were celebrities in the community. The city council, the mayor, they were all celebrities in the community. And sadly, it's not that way anymore.
Yeah. And so how did you adapt to these rapid changes in the broadcasting industry? Because like you said, the newspaper isn't there anymore.
Well, broadcasting has changed so much because, again, I'll spin records or make the motion like I'm spinning records. Now everything is on a hard drive, is, you know, on a computer. But along the way, the technology changed a great deal. We used to have our commercials and do our newscast on something that were called cartridges, but we shorten it to carts in broadcast. For someone who has never seen one, picture kind of like an 8-track tape if you've seen one of those. But it had a clear top, and they were in, like in 40-second, 70-second intervals or lengths. And then eventually everything, you know, we would edit online. That was a change. When we first would edit, we would do it with a razor blade and a pencil. I see Kathleen Pavelka shaking her head because she remembers these days. But that was a skill. I mean, eventually I was editing my 8-tracks because 8-tracks always got eaten. So I was, editing my 8-track tapes, and I was so proud of myself when I was able to edit it with the razor blade and the little bar. But that was a big change. You know, as I said, I was the director of affiliate relations for Radio Pennsylvania. My job was to go around the state and recruit stations to become part of the network and to keep in contact with them. At our height, we had 77 affiliates across the state. What those stations would use Radio Pennsylvania for is their Capital News, or if they didn't have a news department, their newscast. Mm-hmm. Those 77 stations, if you added up their cumulative weekly audience at one point, had 1.4 million listeners in the state every week. But then things changed. The federal government deregulated broadcasting, and there were limits on how many stations, radio stations and TV stations and newspapers that a single owner could have. Well, when they deregulated, what they had in mind was actually, part of it was a good cause. They were trying to get more diverse voices, more diverse ownership in radio. Well, what happened was just a handful of owners bought all the radio stations. Mm-hmm. And what they did was they started eliminating news departments. Mm-hmm. That news just wasn't important. They found that, you know, it didn't sell. So the same owners were programming stations, the music, the same way all across the country. But it got to a point where commercial radio stations especially, you know, we're at a point now where if they do news at all, it's 60 seconds of headlines in the morning and nothing really in depth. That was one of the big differences I saw here at WITF, is that there was a devotion to news and information. And for someone who was a broadcast journalist, this was, I couldn't believe it. I came from a radio station where the latest Madonna song was the big thing of the day to, how are we going to cover that news story? Mm. So those were some of the things that have happened over the years, but not necessarily good things for the broadcast industry, I think, for the listening public, but good for those who listen to a station like WITF.
Want to make a transition here and solely concentrate on your radio career. So if you can take us back, do you remember your very, very first broadcast?
Yes.
Can you tell us about it?
It was not pretty. The very first time I opened the microphone at WPDC in Elizabethtown, I made a mistake. And before turning off the microphone, under my breath, I used a four-letter word. Somehow I survived that. But, yes, I remember the very first time I was on. Yeah. I thought, this is it. I will not have a career in radio.
So how have you grown since that point?
I don't think I've ever used a four-letter word again. 46 years, so that's maybe today will be the... I've been able to have the discipline not to do that. Mm. Although there were times I wanted to.
Yeah. And specifically looking at, again, we just talked about some of the changes that has happened and that has happened in news and broadcasting, whether it be technology or whether it be just the information itself. But I'm talking about the evolution of news consumption and how it has changed over the years. How have you seen it from your perspective? Because you have a TV and radio
aspect with this?
Well, yes, it has changed, and really the most in the last few years, because many listeners and viewers today are consuming their news, if they're consuming news at all, are getting their information from a source other than linear radio, other than TV. I mean, online obviously is one of the ways that they do it, but streaming, so many, I mean, I don't know what the demographic breakdown is, but I think that before, you know, people before the age of 40, maybe 35, that's how they're getting their information nowadays, or their entertainment is they're streaming rather than listening to the radio or watching TV. Obviously, not as many are reading newspapers, and quite frankly, I'm sad to see that, because I still like reading a newspaper, a real newspaper, unfolding it. I still receive L&P every morning and open it up and read it from cover to cover.
Now, one thing that is very important with this news and consumer relationship is trust. So what role does trust play in the relationship between journalists and audience?
A big one. That's the short answer. Unfortunately, something else that has changed is that there are so many places for people to get their news and information that they can find places that, you know, pretty much echoes their own beliefs. And it's hard sometimes to get people to realize that you are a credible journalist. I mean, just over this weekend, I had my nephew, who owns a business, say, "I don't care what you say in the media, the economy is not good, we're in a recession." Well, the statistics say that we are in a healthy economy, and that the definition of a recession is three straight quarters where there's no growth. And we have been growing quite strong. But when you're hearing, like the television commercial you see about Joe Biden, is it that he's not telling the truth, or is it dementia? You know, those are things you didn't hear even 10 years ago, but especially back in the day. I'm retired, remember, I'm going to use that a lot now. Back in the day. But yeah, it's. I've had people, when I tell them I work at WITF, it's like, "Oh, you liberal commies." I'm like, "Do I look like a communist? Are you saying that are you questioning my integrity? Are you saying that, you know, the journalist I work with, that we show our bias, that we lie?" And, you know, those are things you're dealing with today.
And how do you handle criticism from listeners, especially with the Spark?
Everyone has their own opinions and how they perceive what we do. One week in particular I can think of that I think is a good example. I had a voicemail from a woman said, "Obviously you're a right-wing Christian zealot." 2 days later, got another voicemail from a guy who said, "Obviously you're a socialist." So those kind of things are, you know, it's the perception. If they're not hearing what they want to hear, or something that questions their beliefs, you know, well, they're going to think that, there's, you know, you're not telling the truth. There's something wrong with you. But no, I mean, most of the time, I overwhelmingly have gotten positive emails and responses from listeners over the years. Every once in a while, you know, you'll get one that they don't agree with you, or, you know, I never really have been called names other than the socialist and the zealot.
We have about a minute left. Is there any name that, like, really stood out as, like, "You know what, that's not correct," or "That was a creative name you called me"?
Well, both those right-wing Christian zealot and socialist, I'm somewhere in the middle of that. So those were the two names that kind of stick out to me.
Yeah.
I mean, no one really ever got to the point of being obscene or anything like that. So, you know, that was a good thing.
Scott, I will tell you this. Live studio audience, interviewing a big name celeb like yourself, I feel like Oprah. And not going to lie, you know, I can get used to this. So again, I want to welcome you all back to The Spark. And our guest today is one of the greatest to ever do it, Mr. Scott Lamar. And speaking about Oprah and celebrities and such, can you tell us who were some of the biggest names you interviewed?
Okay, I'm going to open my notes here. I used to tell guests, don't bring notes because you don't want to read. But one of the things I've found over the years is that my memory of broadcast was very poor. And I always attributed that to a daily talk show, that today's broadcast is finished. I'm thinking about tomorrow. I've had people ask me, you know, who were your guests today? What were you talking about? And I have to really think hard about it because, you know, how many times? Terry Madonna. Was Terry Madonna on your show today? Yeah, I think. But, you know, when I sat down and thought about this, went back through the records, I was surprised at the number of well-known, memorable people that I have interviewed. You know, being a local interviewer, you're thinking, well, you mostly have talked to local or, in our case, Pennsylvania well-known people. But, you know, I've talked to two presidents, three first ladies, probably about a dozen U.S. senators, probably a dozen best-selling authors. I figured out over 10 Pulitzer Prize winners. In entertainment, Jane Fonda. Who else? Okay, I have to look at my list here, Marquise. Jane Fonda, John Cleese, Rainn Wilson, Tom Berenger, Stephen Lang, Ken Burns. Tiny Tim is one that a lot of people ask me about. I actually got him to sing Tiptoe Through the Toilet. Did I say toilet? Tiptoe Through the Toilet Tulips. Now, again, a lot of people, younger people, may not know who Tiny Tim was because he is passed now. But in the late 60s, he got married to his wife, Miss Vicky, on The Tonight Show. But he was a little bit quirky. And so getting him to sing Tiptoe to the Tulips was a big deal. But a lot of athletes, so, you know, often, again, this satisfied my curiosity and thirst for sports. Ted Williams, Mike Schmidt, Ferguson Jenkins, let me look down through the list because this was like my longest list. Mario Andretti, Gaylord Perry, Bob Gibson, Brooks Robinson, Joe Paterno, Len Dawson, Nick Foles, just probably about 30 that people would recognize. And those are just the ones I remember. So.
And you also interviewed war veterans, such as the World War II veterans for the War Story series in 2007. Can you tell us about that and what inspired you to start that series?
Well, what inspired it was Ken Burns, one of his series of documentaries, history documentaries, was on World War II. It was called The War. And the producers encouraged local stations, public stations, to interview World War II vets in our area. And I got the job of interviewing those vets. And it was not just vets, but it was also people at home talking about on the home front. We interviewed about 30 of them, gave them about a half hour each. It was for TV, so, you know, there's a TV camera there. And this, I have to say, is my favorite set of interviews. Because at that time, 2007, most of these men were in their 80s, mid to late 80s. But you know, these guys were, most of them had some health issues, would walk in maybe hunched over a little bit, saw a few that had IV bruises on their arms, losing hair, you know, did not look to be in the best of health. And then they would sit down and tell the most amazing stories I have ever heard. And these are just local vets. We had a man from Mount Joy who was a survivor of the massacre at Malmedy. We had someone who was in the 101st Airborne that was in Bastogne during the Battle of the Bulge. What else? We had a guy from York who his plane was shot down and survived with a few of his crew members in a raft for 23 days. Was picked up by a submarine, transferred to a ship, and the ship was crashed into by a kamikaze. And these are all just in local central Pennsylvania. So those were by far my favorite interviews. And one of the reasons I was real honored was not only to talk to those people and, you know, some of their wives, too, that were talking about the work being done here on the home front. I mean, I remember the one woman said that she did not see her husband for 3.5 years. Mm. Can you imagine today not seeing your spouse for 3.5 years while he's at war? But those interviews, we edited them down to like 7 short, probably 2.5, 3 minutes that aired on WITF-TV. Then we also did a series with longer versions, but the entire interviews were sent to the Library of Congress. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is one of my favorite things to talk about is that if you look up Scott Lamar, Library of Congress, those interviews will come up and they'll be there forever. Mm. So, and we also had, okay, now this wasn't part of the war stories, but when they ask about most memorable interviews, we had 2 Pearl Harbor survivors on the show. And one of them was a radar operator at Pearl Harbor. And for those who know that history or maybe saw the movie, there were 2 radar operators at Pearl Harbor. They saw a blip on the radar, called it in, and said, there's a large group of planes coming to Hawaii. And we're told, it was a Sunday morning, told by a superior, oh, don't worry about it. It's American planes coming in from the mainland. Well, that wasn't the case. But there were only 2 radar operators, and one of them was from Harrisburg, and he was on the show. Mm. That, and again, he brought along, he testified before Congress about you know, what happened and what he did to make sure that the radar operators were not part of the Japanese conspiracy. You know, so that felt part of history. Mm. I loved that.
Now, For your interviews that did happen, you had a lot of great interviews. Is there an interview that didn't happen that stands out?
Yes. Barack Obama.
Mm. That'll stand out.
The 2008 presidential campaign, the candidates were in Pennsylvania often. And we had contacted all the campaigns to try to arrange interviews. And the Obama campaign said, we'll get something for you. We'll get an interview for you. Well, it was still Smart Talk TV at that time. We were doing a show that week on migrant workers. Hmm. I was in Adams County in the middle of an orchard talking to fruit pickers. We didn't have cell service. So we get back to the station, and there's a voicemail. Actually, more than one, but a voicemail that said, we have some time set aside for you to interview Senator Obama this afternoon at 1. And they told me where. Went to the second voicemail, which was 2 hours later.
Oh.
Said, since you didn't call us back, we gave the interview to someone else. So, but I did get to see then Senator Obama when he made his famous speech on race at the National Constitution Center in Philadelphia, and bought a book a few years after that, that was listed as one of the 25 greatest speeches in American history. Mm. So got to see that as well.
So, Scott, we have one more minute left for this segment. You did have a story about you didn't get Barack, but you did get Michelle, and she touched your hair.
Yeah. Yeah, this is, she was in New York campaigning, and they told us we had 10 minutes. She was in a hurry, had a tight schedule, so 10 minutes only. So she came out from the rally, and she asked the woman she was with, her aide, "How's my hair look?" And the aide started combing her hair. And I thought, okay, this is cutting into my 10 minutes. I said, "Miss Obama, your hair looks great. Your hair looks great." And, she kept brushing her hair, and I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to miss asking questions because of her hair. So I said, yeah, it looks great. I got my hair cut last night, too, just for this. And she ran her fingers through my hair and says, oh, it looks great. So, not too many people can say that
right.
Beyond Barack.
From missing Barack to have Michelle caress your scalp. That's a nice consolation prize. I will say that. Scott, this has been fantastic. I myself feel better again just being at your foot. So I am going to say in front of all America, thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, indeed.
Well, when you called me the goat, I'm thinking I've been called names that were animals, but usually the backside of it.
So for yourself and your time here at WITF, what do you hope that your legacy leaves beyond today?
I didn't think about legacy for a long, long time. And I never really did this to create a legacy, but people will use superlatives, and I do appreciate them, and actually I'm kind of embarrassed by some of them. But one of the things I found in my radio career over the years is that very often when a personality leaves a station, there's an uproar, especially if they're fired. There's an uproar from listeners. Oh, I'll never listen to your station again. And then 2 weeks later, they're listening to the station. So I'm thinking to myself that 2 weeks after I retire, like, Scott who? So I don't know. I don't know what to expect, but what I hope is that people remember me for being conversational, asking questions that the listeners wanted to know, asking questions that they may not thought of, that they were entertained, they were educated, that they enjoyed their time listening to the show when I was hosting. I mean, those are some of the things that I hope they remember.
And for your interviews and when you interview folks, what is the lasting impression that you would want your listeners and the person doing the interview to have after you completed your interview with them?
Well, from a personal point of view, I've always hoped that they would say, that guy knows what he's talking about. I mean, one of the biggest compliments that I've gotten over the years is that you're prepared, that you're obviously prepared. And I've had some guests say to me that you'd be surprised how many journalists are unprepared for an interview. And I don't understand that. I don't know how you can go into an interview and not know about the person you're speaking to, not knowing about the issue, and just winging it, because that's what it feels like. So I've always taken that as a compliment when someone has said, you're obviously prepared. Someone has said, you're the best interviewer I've ever come in contact with. you know, for an interviewer, one of the highlights is when a guest that has been around, someone who has been interviewed by a lot of people says, you will say, I've never been asked that question before. Mm. You know, that's when you think, okay.
Yeah. I like the part when they say, oh, that's a good question. And it's like,
that's right.
What?
That's right. Now, sometimes they're trying to waste time thinking of an answer. I've had guests that have said, that's a good question, like 8 times in the interview. And I'm like, and there have been times where I've been, you know, kind of snarky about it and said, I strive for a good
question. Like, well, that's what I get paid
for.
Yeah,
that's right.
So we talked about your biggest criticism. What about the biggest compliment? Can you remember the biggest compliment that you got? Did somebody ever send you like a life-size Scott Lamar poster or something like that?
Well, it would have to be a big poster, I'd put it that way. But no, nothing like that. But again, those kind of compliments from listeners saying that I always enjoyed your interviews. Well, now with retirement and announcing the retirement, I've gotten a lot of emails from listeners saying we're going to miss you. I mean, you don't realize, you know, radio is such a personal thing that you're, for many people, you're part of the family or part of their day. And they've said that you're not being able to hear your voice, it's like I'm going to be missing part of my day will change, or part of the family is leaving. So, you know, I hope that doesn't sound, you know, like I think highly of myself, but, you know, it does make you feel good.
And for the next generation of journalists, whether it's here at WITF, whether they're listening online or on the radio, what message do you have for them?
Well, you know, one of the things that I think has made me a successful interviewer, and I would say the same thing to journalists, but I'd say this even for everyday conversation, is listen. So many people, when they're involved in a conversation, they're thinking about what they're going to say next. They're not really listening to what that person is saying. I have always found that to be one of the keys to a successful interview, is really listen to what that person is saying. Not only can you continue a conversation that flows, but it helps you think of another question, maybe go in another direction where you find out something that's interesting. And I just find so many people, journalist included, who just don't listen. So that would be number one, is listen, prepare, learn to write, read as much as you can. Know, and not when you read, don't just read the things you think that you agree with personally, but read what the people you disagree with are writing and saying at the same time, just so you know what's going on around the world and on all sides.
Yeah. Scott, this interview has been fantastic. I'm going to take this with me forever.
Oh, thank you.
And I appreciate you giving us such insight on your career and what's going on in the mind of Mr. Lamar. So I'm going to actually leave some of the last 2 minutes for you to address the audience because you have such a legacy, and I don't want them to have me be the last person that they hear because, again, you just have so much to give. And I'm more than sure that you have so much to say. I wore my Superman socks today in honor of you because you, sir, are indeed our Superman.
Well, thank you, my friend.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And again, I don't know whether I deserve that or not, but I'm thinking filling 2 minutes without telling a story. Boy, that's hard to do. But I will say that my time on WITF has been the highlight of my career and one of the highlights of my life. I mean, it's been an honor. It was fun to come to work every day. No, there were days where maybe it wasn't so fun. But for the most part, a good time. I've got to meet so many people. I don't know whether I said this earlier or not, but I figured out that I've hosted like 3,500 shows, had probably about 5,000 guests. And there are very few that I can think of that I wouldn't say were good guests. And being curious, too, was, and that when you ask about, you know, one of the things I would tell future journalists, I don't know where I came up with my curiosity, but I'm curious about a lot of things. Now, curious about some things more than others. Like, my family often wonders how I can remember that Mike Schmidt hit 36 home runs in 1974, but not remember, oh, I have to start supper tonight. But I've done the same thing with a lot of the events that I've been involved with, and I hope that the audience appreciated the knowledge that I brought to the program and their contributions. I did like when we took phone calls in the program, especially here at WITF, because the audience is so well connected and so, for the most part, so well informed. Yeah, there were some phone calls over the years that I'll remember. You know, that we have a 7-second delay. I only had to use it once in 13 years. And that was from a regular listener, a word that you hear every day on TV now. So I thought, okay. But I will just end this by saying thank you very much for listening. Everyone is here today. Thank you. You all have made a positive contribution to my life, things that I'll remember. It's been an honor. And as far as what comes next, I don't know. But thank you very much. And I don't know. I'm not a religious person, but say bless you. Thank you for being with us.
And can we get it one more time? You're listening to The Spark. Scott Lamar, have yourself a nice day.
You're listening to The Spark on WITF. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a nice day.